Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. First in the list is XComp Manager, or XComp MGR. This is it says explicitly in the man page, it is a sample or an example compositor for X11, meaning that with XComp Manager, you get the ability to update objects, graphical objects, in some new and exciting ways that the man page goes so far as to call eye candy. I mean, it's really just, it's not necessary. It is just for fun. But even fun things often have the ability to have a practical use. For instance, drop shadows. That's a kind of a really good example because it is not necessary. You don't have to have a drop shadow behind a window. And yet, that little bit of implied separation does help the brain frequently sort of separate, differentiate one window from another. It's just a visual cue for, well, this window stops here and is sitting, quote unquote, on top of that window back there. Now, it's also part of the compositor's job to ensure that things are being updated when they move out from under something else and you know, it has to redraw the screen, that sort of thing. So that's part of a compositor as well. But XComp Manager, I think the intent really is to show off something a little bit beyond the basics. And by a little bit, I do mean a little bit. But you can see it in action if you want. I found the easiest way to do this was just to go to xwmconfig. We talked about that in the previous episode or the episode before that. The shell script that Pat Volkerding wrote to help you select a window manager. I had XFCE selected on my virtual machine, so I went down to TWM, selected that. Started XDM, just because later in this episode we're going to talk about XDM, but I started up a session manager of some sort, logged in, got a TWM desktop, and then in a terminal launched XComp MGR -F as in Foxtrot, or actually as in Fade in this case, and that activated XComp Manager. Now, you can do that in other desktops, but then you have to replace the thing that they are using. So, like in XFCE, it just kept telling me, nope, can't use XComp Manager because I'm using CompIS right now. And I could have gone in and tried to figure out how to unset that from XFCE, but I just didn't want to bother. So, something very simple like TWM or even Fluxbox could. I think it's a little bit easier. So I did that, XComp Manager. -F means that it's going to, I think that's a fade, -F, where is it? Fade in, yeah, enables a smooth fade effect for transient windows like menus and for all windows on hide and restore. So if I click on the desktop, the sort of the blank region on my TWM desktop. I have to click and hold. I forgot. Then I can see that the menu fades in rather than just appears. Now, if I stop XComp MGR and I click the menu, just bang, it's just there. It's just instantly there. Now you might think, well, instantly there sounds better than a slow fade, but that's why they call it eye candy, because it's something that is not strictly required, but that could be pleasant to look at, possibly, if that's what you want. And the same thing when you click that little icon in the top left corner of the window and shrink it down to like a little icon that you can then drag around, that transitioning from a full-on window to a little icon, it sort of fades out rather than just instantly clicks over to it. So that's XComp Manager. Really simple features, but enough to demonstrate what a compositor could do. Next up is XConsole. XConsole looks at the contents of /dev/console and displays it in a graphical window for you. That's all it does. There's not a whole lot you are going to probably be able to do with it because there's not a whole lot, at least on my system, going on in /dev/console. So I don't know. I left it open for a while and never got a single message. I tried to echo a message straight to /dev/console, but you can't do that. So, yeah, that's X-Console. X-Cursor themes. Well, they're cursor themes for X. Now, these are the graphics in use by libxcursor, and these were originally created way back for the X-Free86 project. So that's a while ago, but it eventually got merged into X11 and, or rather X.org, and it is now distributed with the X11 package or software set, whatever it is, with X11. Okay, so you can't see these exactly. I mean, you can look at their names. You can do a less on var log packages, X cursor themes, but these are, they're not image files like, you know, like an image form. It's not a bitmap file, in other words, like the X bitmaps were. These are cursor files. These are X cursor files. So if you try to look at them with an image viewer, you'll just get an error that it doesn't know how to look at these files. I can't even really tell you anything about them, because again, not an image file. But if you do a file on one of them, like file user share icons, handhelds, cursors, Gumby, believe it or not, that is one of them. I don't know what it looks like. It tells you that it is an X11 cursor. That's the file type. So can't really just browse at these, but they exist, and you could choose them for your X cursor, I guess. You can also generate your own cursors. You can prepare X11 cursor sets for use with libxcursor with xcursorgen, which is the next package. xcursorgen takes an image file or xcursorgen reads a configuration file that you provide to find a list of cursor images along with their hotspot and nominal size information, and then it converts all of those images listed in the config file to the X cursor format and writes them into, you know, some output file as a cursor file. So the a config file needs to have the size, X hot and Y hot. So the hotspot being the thing that does the collision detection, really. And then the file name of the image file, and then the millisecond delay. And that's such an interesting thing to have to have programmed into the cursor, is the millisecond delay. That fascinates me. I've never made a cursor theme for X. I'm not going to make a cursor theme for X. It sounds like something that could be fun, I guess, but I mean, then you'd also have to know how to set your X cursor theme, and then you'd also have to use an application that actually used the X cursor theme over the desktop environment cursor theme. And I think that's kind of the real trick, because that's just not how modern computing, that's not how modern Linux really is. Like, generally speaking, you see, certainly on my desktop, the cursor that I see most is the Plasma desktop cursor. Although, I mean, granted, sometimes it switches over to some other kind of cursor based on what kind of widget set it's hovering over. So it's not always the same cursor, which is a little bit annoying, I guess. It's not something I really think about all that often, but I guess ideally you'd just have the same cursor the whole time. Although, you know, I guess you do want an application to have the power to change the cursor, right? I mean, you do want that, because, I mean, if you have some specialized cursors for a specific application, you'd obviously want to respect that override. Next up is XDBDizzy. That's XD and then BBE. Dizzy, DIZZY. It's a demo of the X11 double buffer extension. That's DBE, so XDBE, Dizzy, double buffered spinning scene. In theory, you could witness this for yourself with the XDBE Dizzy command, but when I issue that, it says that it fails to find a matching double buffer capable visual. However, the man page kind of explains, no, it doesn't. The man page explains nothing. DBE, the man page for DBE, the double buffer extension, does explain at least some concepts that are useful to know. Double buffering is a really neat trick whereby you have two buffers. What's a buffer? Well, it's a holding area. It's a place where things are loaded before they're required. So a double buffer uses two buffers, one called the front buffer, one called the back buffer. And only the front buffer is actually visible to the user. The back buffer is populated when, you know, after the front buffer has its content, so that you always have a thing that is rendered and ready to go right behind the one that is being seen right now. And of course, we're talking milliseconds. I mean, these frames, these buffers are being populated and then exposed and then populated and exposed milliseconds at a time. Like, it's happening rapidly because you are moving a selection area in an application, or you're moving a window around, or you're moving a window that's playing video around. You know, like, you don't want lag. You want everything to be able to load quickly and smoothly without any discernible interruption. And double buffering is a really, really important and significant way of making that happen. Unfortunately, I can't see it happening, at least in the demo, because I'm doing something wrong, but the man page doesn't help me diagnose that in any way. Okay, next up is the XDG Desktop Portal. This is a front-end service for Flatpak. Maybe other things that need a portal, but right now, as far as I know, that's just Flatpak. I mean, I guess there's PodEnv that might use this. I'm not sure. I don't know that it does, but maybe it does. Anyway, XDG desktop portal exposes Dbus interfaces known as portals with an expected and predictable naming scheme, so that Flatpak can identify places that it's allowed to access. Flatpak is the theory behind Flatpak is that you're containerizing an application. And when you containerize something, when you put something in a container, it has boundaries. It has a very specific scope. So a Flatpak in its purest form would not know that your home directory exists were it not for a portal. So a portal is just like very similar to poking a hole through a firewall. Yes, generally speaking, you want that wall there, but for this one thing, this one little service, or this one action, you actually do need a hole in that wall. You need the application to be able to access something. XDG Desktop Portal provides a bunch of desktop services like, Dbus stuff to Flatpak, assuming that the Flatpak author has stated that the desktop portal is required. And you see this a lot of times in mobile phones as well. I mean, in principle, where, a photo or an application isn't even allowed to access your photos without your permission. And that's you opening up a portal saying, why, yes, in fact, I do have photos and here they are. And the theory is that if you are alerted that an application wants access to your photos, then you might stop and think, well, wait a minute, why does this application need access to my photos? Well, if it's a photo editor of some sort, then yeah, it makes sense. It does need access to your photos. But if it's something that advertises to be something completely different, like a tuning fork for an instrument, then yeah, you probably don't, or a guitar tuner, it probably shouldn't need access to your photos, and you might wonder why it wants access to your photos. And you might uninstall it because you might think, well, whether that developer knows it or not, like, this is poorly designed, and so I don't want to use this. Or, worst case scenario, they're trying to abuse the privilege of being installed on your device. So XDG Desktop Portal is the same kind of concept. It blocks everything off from Flatpak or from something in a container, which currently, yeah, is pretty much Flatpak, and just doesn't let it know that other things exist, unless XDG Desktop Portal permission is granted, some element of that is granted to the Flatpak, in which case, yes, it can access your network or access your photo directory or your home directory or your microphone device. Well, actually, that wouldn't be, it might be, I'm not sure, but it has access to things outside of its normal purview. Very, very useful. Can get a little confusing, though, because sometimes you'll launch a flat pack that maybe you're working on, and it won't work. You know, it doesn't, something isn't working, and you have to go and figure out why you don't have access to something, and it turns out, yep, you needed to do a fancy portal thing in Flatpak. But the documentation for building Flatpaks is actually pretty good. I've been impressed with it. And you generally know pretty early on about portals and the fact that you might need to use them. And it becomes pretty self-evident, I feel, pretty quickly when you've forgotten to add a portal to your Flatpak. Okay, so that's XDG desktop portal. Now it's XDG user dir. This package contains a command called XDG user dir, and it tells you your user directory. There are functions like this in a lot of programming languages, or you know, like modules or libraries for languages. I don't think that many languages has this as a built-in function, but someone's developed it just to identify where the user data lives. It's a really important thing. So if you're writing a shell script and you're trying to figure out for some reason where the user directory is, you could use theoretically xdg-userdir to figure that out. You might wonder, like, why that would be necessary. Like, couldn't you just use $home? Probably. Couldn't you just use tilde? Probably. Couldn't you use /home/$user? Not necessarily. You don't know the structure of a person's system. Like they might have their home folder squirreled away in some other subdirectory. So you can't really be sure that it's going to be /home/$user. But yeah, $home usually does resolve correctly. That's true. But still, XDG user dir could be useful for just an authoritative answer of, okay, well, what's the root level, or what's the base directory of this user's data? Like, where do I start? And that'll give you /home/clatu or /home/gort or /home/whatever your username is. And I can't stress enough how much I really enjoy introspective commands, by which I mean commands that tell you something that you probably should already know, but maybe you don't. I just think there's a lot of value there. I mean, or it tells you stuff that you maybe you shouldn't already know, but you don't, but you need to know. So I think those are valuable, and I've always thought they were valuable, I think, but boy, am I convinced, if I wasn't before, having dealt with so many X binaries, like binaries in the X directory here, I'm realizing how vital introspection is in a command. Like, I don't care if you as the developer believe that I, as the user, ought to know, I don't know, whatever, my own home directory. Maybe I don't. Maybe I don't understand that's what's being asked of me. Give me a command that I can use, or give me an option in your command that I can use to discover that information. Give me a dump of a file that you've parsed to give me all of the options for screens or screen modes that my system is capable of, or what kind of keyboard layouts are available to me. Like, just give me that list. I don't care if you think it's obvious, or that I should know it anyway, or that surely I would have known because I purchased the thing in the first. You don't know the situation, so just allow for investigation, or introspection, as I call it. So, or as people call it. It's not just me, I don't think. And that, interestingly, relates a little bit to the next package, in a good way. XDG-utils. This is nothing but, well, it's not true, but I mean, it's a bunch of introspective commands, and it's great. So, let me go to get a master list here. Less var log XDG-utils. You got XDG-desktop icon, desktop menu, email, icon resource, mime, open, screensaver, and settings. Now, admittedly, you're not going to probably use these commands, and I say you're not going to use, I don't know what you're going to do. You might use them all the time. You don't have to use these commands. You could, most desktop environments have applications to set the properties that you could change with these commands through some other means. So you don't have to use xdg-settings or xdg-mime or xdg-open and so on if you don't want to. But they're there, available if you want them. Starting rather randomly at the bottom, xdg-settings with no arguments, doesn't give you any help, but it tells you to type in --help. Okay, good enough. So there's that, and it says xdg-settings, get, check, and set. All right, well, let's try get. And no parameter name given. What parameters are valid? Like, what can I give it? You don't know. If you go to man xdg, don't worry, this is ending in a happy ending, not a complaint. If you go to the man page, it doesn't really give you any sign of what you might use this for. That's not true. There's examples there. But that's just a couple examples, right? So xdg-settings-list reveals all of the things that xdg settings is currently aware of. Now, right now, that's literally two things. Default URL scheme handler and default web browser. Could there be more? Yeah, probably. This is just a little database application, right? You're adding values, setting values, getting the values back, and so on. So that's kind of cool that you can see what the options are. So now I could do xdg-settings based on the output of --list and let's do a get default-web-browser, and it tells me that's a user app-firefox-m745tz.desktop. Brilliant. Firefox is my default. Who knew? I did. I set it. And I could reset it. I could say xdg settings set default web browser and then give it some valid, I guess that's the key. They give it a valid value, and suddenly you've got you've now set a new value for that key. So that's huge. That's a big deal. It's really nice. There are more than just XDG settings. Of course, there's also XDG open. This is a really good one. I mean, what's XDG screensaver? It's not gonna do anything, right? No. Okay, so you can apparently command line tool for controlling the screensaver. I don't think I have a screensaver, to be honest. I'm not going to try because I'm afraid it'll blank my screen and I won't be able to get out of it or something. So I'm not going to do that. But that's XDG screensaver. You want to activate your screensaver. XDG screensaver is the way to do it, I guess. But XDG open is a very cool one. So if I do XDG open and then I give it a path to, here's a calendar.pdf apparently. I don't know what this is. Hopefully I'll find out. Yes, it opened it in Ocular. Oh, it's the, I remember this. This is the Julian date calendar. Yeah, I didn't end up falling in love with the Julian calendar like I would hope, like I'd kind of hoped, but it is kind of good to know about. So anyway, XDG open understands, based on the MIME database, what application to call in order to open a specific kind of file, as long as the file is listed in the MIME database. I mean, obviously, if it's something really just completely unknown, then it's not going to open it in anything, because it won't know what to do. However, assuming it's all listed, it is. So it's functionally just like opening a file manager, finding a file you want to view, and clicking on it, or double-clicking if you're not using Plasma Desktop or if you have single-click turned off. And it's really, really useful. And it's one of those commands that it's just, I don't exactly know why there's not just an open command. O-P-E-N, open. Just like I wish there was just an install command. Install. It doesn't matter. I don't want to worry about it. I'll set in XDG settings what my package manager is. Just give me a known, intuitive command. And I feel like a lot of the theoretical problem in my mind with sort of the way that Linux has developed over many, many decades is that some of the really good commands just got taken early on. Now, I don't know that there's an open command. I mean, it doesn't, nothing comes up if I just type in open. I do imagine that there's a open keyword in a programming language, and maybe that's why they avoided the word open as a command. I don't know. It seems like a really obvious one to me. But open, install, I don't know. Those are the only two I can think of off the top of my head. But I would love intuitive commands, command names, even if they were variables that were set by some other application. It would be huge, I think. Really, really big deal. Well, we're not through this package yet, but that's okay. Let's just take a coffee break. We'll come back and finish it up and then take a look at some more. B2 coffee. That's the kind of coffee that I got. B2 bomber. Wasn't sure. It's B2. That's the one I got. B2 coffee is not what I'm drinking, though. B2 is from Flight Coffee. It just came in the mail today. I'm really excited about it because I know I do like it. But I still have the rest of this big cozy coffee, also from Flight Coffee, that I'm finishing up. So I'm still working on the last bit of the winter blend. But we'll switch over to B2 as soon as I finish. All right, let's talk more about this XDG Utils package. The best ones in my mind, really the best one is XDG Open. I just think that's so brilliant. XDG Settings seems useful as well. As I say, there's a high probability that you won't use these directly. Although XDG Open, I mean, honestly, I might have to alias that to Open because it just seems so useful. It's just so easy to just type Open and then a path to the file. But how would you know what it was going to open in? Well, glad you asked. It's XDG-MIME. This is another one of those introspective tools. It can tell you something about your system. XDG-MIME space query, and then the path to some document. So I'm going to go /documents/calendar.pdf. Oh no, it failed. It told me unknown query type. That wasn't supposed to happen. That didn't happen in previous tests. Oh, I know, I forgot a keyword. So yeah, I forgot. This isn't actually a one-step process, which is a kind of a pity. But anyway, XDG-MIME:query:file type. /documents/calendar.pdf. That returns application/pdf. So that tells you, like in MIME notation, what you are dealing with. It's an application/pdf in this case. And that kind of thing is very useful because, frankly, not all of these file types make sense. You know, you get things like audio/opus, but then you get like application/pdf. Like, what do you mean application/pdf? That doesn't make any sense. So to figure out what that translates to, like why that matters to your system, you can do XDG-MIME:query:default:application/pdf. And that tells you that the application that would open this file type is ocular application_pdf.desktop. That's the name of Ocular's desktop entry, apparently. So doing something similar here, we'll do file type/documents. Here's sample file.odt. So this looks like an application/vnd.oasis.opendocument.txt. Oof, that's a string. XDG-MIME:query:default:application/vnd.oasis.opendocument.txt, and that reveals that the application to open that would be LibreOffice-Writer.desktop. So you get the idea. It is a two-step process. Seems a little bit weird. I wish there was like a let's get to the point kind of command here where I could just query and find out just ultimately what I want to know. But I mean, that assumes, yeah, I mean, your use case might not be the same, you know, like both of those steps are important to someone. So it's kind of, they're important to have. I do kind of wish there was a way to skip over doing it twice. I mean, there is, you can script it. It's super easy, but I'm not going to do that. There's also, you know, ways to add, you can install a MIME type. So if there's something that you want to define as a MIME type, it's like maybe 8 lines of XML. You give it a type, You give it the application that you want it to open in. Well, actually, you wouldn't do that in the XML. So you give it the type, basically. You give it the file extensions that would easily identify that file. And then you install that with xdg-mime install mydefinition.xml. And then, of course, you could use xdg-settings to set what kind of application would open your new file type. And the other commands within this XDG utils package are kind of in that vein. They help you maintain sort of the way your system interprets data or data types, I guess you could say, file types, certainly. Like XDG-icon resource install, you can install things that you want to be defined or to be associated rather with a MIME type that you have defined. And that's why you get standardized icons for all of your, I don't know, .odt files or your .pdf files. Well, on some desktops, the standardized icon is replaced by a thumbnail. So that's a different story, but that's a function of the desktop and just probably something you could turn off as well, I think. I'm pretty sure. It's utilities to help your system understand what kind of file types you are going to be dealing with and how you want it to deal with those file types. Very, very useful little package, xdg-utils. Next up is xditview. This is a display application for DITROFF, DITROFF, for your X display. So if we go to a terminal and type in xditview, sure enough, you get a blank window with one menu, which is the file menu, and you can open, reopen, set screen resolution, or quit. I was not able to open anything successfully, strangely, and I had to do a little bit of research about what DITROFF was in the first place. Well, DITROFF apparently is the quote-unquote classical, I don't know what classical means, but it's classical device independent ROFF, R-O-F-F. And the man page for DITROFF says that the first ROFF system was written by Joe Osana around 1973. It supported two output devices. The InROFF program produced text-oriented TTY output, while the TROFF program generated graphical output for exactly one output device, the Wang Graphic Systems CAT typesetter. I have no idea what that is. In 1979, though, Brian Kernighan rewrote TROFF to support more devices by creating an intermediate output format for TROFF that could be fed into post-processor programs that do the printout on the device. This is what's known as classical TROFF today. In order to distinguish it, that is classical TROFF, from Osana's original single-device version, it was called DITROFF or DITROFF, device independent TROFF. At least it was named that on some systems. So it kind of depends, apparently, because not everyone adopted that differentiation. But anyway, today, apparently, any existing ROFF system is based on Kernighan's multi-device TROFF or DITROFF. So the distinction between TROFF and DITROFF isn't really necessary. Every modern TROFF provides functionality, the same functionality as DITROFF did. Okay, so, and then it finishes and says the easiest way to use DITROFF is the GNU ROFF system, GROFF, G-R-O-F-F. Fair enough. So I'm going to do a cat of user man1. Let's do NTP update. Nope, that's not in man1. Okay, let's do NTP trace. There we go. And I'm going to cat that into my temporary directory over here. And I'm going to call it NTP trace.gz. And then I'm going to do a gunzip on NTP trace.gz. So now I'm going to do a file on NTP trace. And I have a TROFF or preprocessor input ASCII text. Okay, well, that's TROFF. So that should be okay, I think. Maybe. Well, let's try it. It's not going to work, but xditview, and I get, well, let's do --- help just to, so it really wants to launch that application before, like, no matter what. Yeah, it's just launching without question. Okay, so I don't think it's going to take an argument, in other words, so I'm just launching xdit view. I'm going to go to File, Open File, and wow, there is absolutely no... It's a field that you just have to type into. There's no like selection or auto, you know, there's no predictive auto completion, whatever. So maybe I should do the whole path. I did tilde before. Let's just be really careful. Do the whole path to NTP. What was it? I don't even remember what it was. Oh, NTP trace. Accept. And nothing happens. It's just nothing. There is nothing. Nothing happens in the graphical application, I should say, because in the terminal, bizarrely, it says unknown command DE1 NOP, unknown command IT1 ANTRAP, and it goes on like that for a while until I start reaching what looks suspiciously like what I associate with, you know, ROF, SH description, NTP, so FB, NTP trace, backslash FP, those are demarcators for, I think, bold, is a Perl script that uses the NTPQ utility program to follow. So, in other words, the man page that I've catted into this file is showing, but bizarrely, in the terminal, in standard out, rather than in the GUI viewer that I have attempted to open it in. And the only thing here I can think of is that differentiation between trough and ditrough or ditrough is apparently necessary, or XDIT view is just really, really broken, one of those two. Or I guess one of those three, I just don't know how to use this application, and somehow opening the file isn't, like, it doesn't happen the way that I think it should happen. But it seems pretty obvious. You click on the button, you click open file, you give it a path to the file. The path is clearly valid. The file is clearly populated. I see the output here in the terminal. I just don't know why it's not appearing in the GUI application. It's very strange. Not a problem I would have expected to run into with a really basic text editor or text viewer. It doesn't even claim to be a text editor. So there you go. That's XDIT view. Moving right along to XDM. This is an application that is a session manager. So it utilizes XSM, session management. And, you know, I mean, the name session manager is kind of a big fancy term for what most people are going to look at and say, oh yeah, that's the login screen. Like, you don't go to a computer at an office and look at the little place where people sign in and say, oh, that's a session manager. I mean, maybe you do, but most people don't. They just look at a screen and they say, oh, that's the login screen. So XDM, SDDM, GDM, LightDM, all of these applications, to most people, they are very simply a login screen. Now, you and I know that in reality, this is not just a login screen. I mean, it is a login screen, but it's not just a login screen. It records things about what you are doing as you use the computer so that when you shut down or log out, it has sort of a memory of what you were just doing. And that way, when you log back in, it can restore applications to previous states, varying upon, you know, support. It kind of depends on what applications you're using and how aware they are that they are being session managed and so on. But generally speaking, that's a really nice use for session management. It also simply, you know, as a login session manager, it records like when you logged in and what terminal you're logging in on and so on. So it's a record keeper, not a big deal. XDM is an awfully basic one. So you can use XDM by launching or you know, by going into Slackware. Maybe run level 3 would be best for this, because otherwise, if you're going to run level 4, you're probably running SDDM. But you could go to run level 3 so that you're just getting a text login. You log in and then you do a sudo XDM. This usually takes you to your, I see why it didn't work for me, because I was already running XDM. This will take you to a new screen of XDM. It's, like I say, really basic. It's got a login blank. You put your username in, you hit return, then you put your password in and you press return, and then it takes you to whatever is populated by .xinitrc. You don't have something set, it'll use whatever your system thinks is the default environment. Maybe TWN is a fallback. So you should get to a desktop after passing the authentication check through XDM. I don't know off the top of my head of any particular advantage of XDM. I think there used to be, I think I read somewhere that XDM was kind of nice if you're using, like, I don't know, Xhost or something like that to log in remotely. There was something that XDM did that others didn't, I think. But it's a vague memory, and I could be getting it wrong. And either way, I don't know of that many people using old X style remote home directories to log in to, like, sort of dumb terminals. It's just not that common. I did work at a place that did do exactly that, so I can't say it's not done. And this was, I'm talking like 5 years ago, six years ago now. So, I mean, it's a thing. It happens. But I think probably it's more common on, like, a true multi-user system. And even then, I'm not sure that it had to be XDM or if it was just XDM because that was the really low overhead, simple, you know, sometimes simpler is just is better. So maybe that was why. XDM, it's there. You can use it if you want to. SDDM is also there. That's the one that I use. And that's the one with, like, desktop selection right there and a virtual keyboard and pretty graphics and so on. And then there's XDPyInfo. And, I mean, if you can't tell from the name, well, actually, you might think from the name that this is like a Python module or something like that. And maybe it is. I don't know. Python 3 import, what was it? XDPy, DPy info? No. How about Py info? No. How about XDPy info? No. Okay. So no, I guess I could also just do the rational thing and look in packages, var log packages, XDPy info, and look for that telltale Python wheel or whatever they call them. Nope, they're not there, so it's not that. Maybe it was written in Python. I'm not sure. I guess I could check on that as well now that I'm wondering. Let's just do a file on user bin xdpyinfo. Will that tell me? No, it's an LSB executable. So I don't know why it's called xdpyinfo, but the info part is the part you'd want to really focus on, because it does give info, and this is why it's one of my favorite commands in the X folder, I think. So I'm going to do xdpyinfo and pipe it to less. Yes, it actually respects less, and it tells you name of display :0. I mean, first of all, how on earth can you get that? Like, xdpyinfo just accidentally, like, reveals the name of your display really, really easily. Like, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, I know you can do echo $ display, but this is just a really nice, like, this is reporting on the system. I love this. Version number 11.0. Version of what? I don't know. I guess I don't care. Xorg version 1.20.14. Great. Maximum request size, a lot of bytes. Supported PixMap map formats. Depth 1, 4, 8, 15, 16, 24, 32. Bits per pixel 32. Scanline pad 32. Key code range minimum 8, maximum 255. Number of extensions 30. Big requests, composite, damage, double buffer, DPMS. Remember double buffer? DRI2, DRI3, GLX, and so on. It just goes on and on and on. But wait, that's not all. Number of screens 1. Default screen number 0. Screen number 0. Dimensions 1920 by 1080 pixels, 530 by 301 millimeters. Resolution 92 by 91 dots per inch. Depths 7, 24, 1, 4, 8, 15, 16, and 32. Root window ID 0x1df. I mean, I'm telling you, it gives you all of the information. It's amazing. How is this thing hidden in a command called xdpyinfo? What were they thinking? I mean, this is brilliant. This should be the star. This X11 info or X info or something like that. That's what this needs to be called, not XDPy info. What is XDPy info? Let's try to find out really quick. Man XDPy info, display information utility for X. I don't know what it is. I do not know why they call it XDPy info. But whatever reason, it is an amazing application. This is really nice. It really is. I mean, I don't think I would be this excited about it normally, but the X folder has been so full of stuff that just doesn't doesn't want to tell you anything about your own computer or how to get around a non-functioning command. And then you've got little gems like xdpi.info that actually just give you really useful info. Hey, speaking of really useful info, xdri.info gives you a little bit of information as well. xdri.info, that's xdri and then info, so it's a double I, it's weird. xdri.info gives you information about your screen and whether it is able to do direct rendering. It's just a simple query tool to see whether information about your DRI driver, basically. So xdri.info tells you whether or not your display is, or a specific display is, and you can define that, dash display, you can give it a display name, but otherwise it just defaults to whatever your display is, tells you whether it's DRI capable. Next package is XEdit. This is a graphical text editor written for, you know, in the X toolkit. I have one experience with this, and, well, two. One, I think I did write like an article about it for a website once, just because I needed to talk about another text editor, because I was writing about like every text editor I could think of. So, maybe I skipped this one. I don't know. Because my other experience with it was at a job. And we all used Linux there. It was a Linux shop. But strange. It's interesting. Some places where you use Linux, even the people who spend all day on Linux, like, they know the three applications that they use. You know, they know, like, oh, the web browser, the 3D modeler, and okay, maybe two applications that they use. Like, it's really weird. And so we were in a meeting and someone needed to view some text, and they just couldn't figure out how to view text on this system. And again, it was weird because it was quite obvious to me, what you would use to use text. And I don't understand how they couldn't find it, probably because it wasn't named, I don't know, text edit or something. But they eventually fell on somehow XEdit. And it is just not a beautiful application by any means. I mean, you kind of get the, you kind of know, right? I mean, it's not a beautiful application. It's written in the little weird XFT or whatever it is, the widget set. It doesn't really understand modern conventions, like, I don't know, scrolling through text or something like that, or page down. You know, there were little things that just, it was painful to witness. And I really wanted to tell people to use something different, but it was one of those situations where if you did try, I think, no, it does do page up and down. Oh, you know what it was? It was a control. It was trying to make the text bigger. They were trying to enlarge the text, and they weren't able to because, yeah, it doesn't know how to do control scroll wheel up. That's not a thing that it does. But anyway, it is a functional text editor. I mean, it does work. I don't know why anyone would use it in today's day and age. You'd be much better off with KWrite or Kate or whatever GNOME uses these days. I don't think it's gedit anymore for some reason, because gedit was really great, but I don't think that's what they use. But yeah, XEdit, it exists. It's a very, very basic text editor. Really, I mean, it's great to have, I guess. I mean, if in a pinch, like, you know, if you just have nothing else, I guess that'll do. I would rather use Nano than XEdit. XEV, this is a great one. XEV creates a little window on your screen, and that window just listens for events happening in the window. Or is it anywhere? Is it anywhere or just in the window? No, it's in the window, right? Yeah. And it's amazing. It's just utterly amazing what kind of information it tells you. Again, introspection. This is the kind of informational application that is just super useful. So XEV, blank window, doesn't really look like much, doesn't give you really any hint as to what you're supposed to do with it, but if you know, you know. And basically, you put your cursor in that space, in that blank space, and anything you, like any button that you click, like if I hit the key, the A key here, it tells me that's a key press event, serial 40, synthetic no, window 0x, whatever, root, don't care. Let's see, what did I used to, oh yeah, key, what's it called? Key sim. Key sim, is, no, key code, that's what you care. Key code is 38. And then if I press, let's say, shift, Well, the key code for that is 62, apparently, at least on this keyboard. Key code for the other shift key on the left is 50, and so on. So you can use this kind of data to then change your Xmod map or modify your Xmod map so that when you press a known key code, like the caps lock 66, when you press that, maybe you want something different to happen. But you can't know the key code without a little bit of introspection. XEV is the thing that provides that. And it tells you, I mean, it'll tell you the key press, the key release. It knows that a mouse motion is a motion notify event. It knows what a button press and button release is, which is different than a key release and a key press, and so on. When you're done with it, you just close it out. You just click the X on the window decoration. But that is a brilliant application. I mean, so simple, but just so informative, because once again, it gives you insight into events happening on your computer, which again, you might not realize otherwise. Like, you wouldn't know that a button press is different than a key press, maybe. Like, maybe they both seem the same to you, or that a mouse motion would be detected. Like, maybe you didn't think about that before, but yeah, that makes sense now that you think about it. So XEV is great, especially if you do need to modify your Xmod map, which presumably we'll get to eventually. That's a great one. But the final one for this episode is XEyes, and that is, it just produces, much like OClock or XClock, it produces kind of a little graphic on your screen, and this one is pretty silly. It's just a pair of eyeballs, and the little pupils in the eyeballs follow your mouse. So it's hypnotically fun, and you might think, well, it also seems really sort of useless. And I guess, you know, I mean, yeah, it probably is. It probably is useless, to be fair. Except I don't think it is. I don't know if you remember a couple of episodes ago, I said that I wanted to talk about, like, OClock and actually XCalc, and certainly XEyes, and this is the one that really made me think of this. But those silly little demo applications, the ones that you look at and you think, well, that's really simple, or that's so simple that it is useless, those are actually really important applications, because sometimes what you want is the simplest application for some proof of concept. Maybe you want just a simple example of how to build a text editor. Well, here's exactly how to do that. It's called XEdit. You can look at the source code, see how to program for this X GUI toolkit, and now you're good. You know, now you have started. You've got a head start on that. And it doesn't have to just be for X either. It could be for Qt. Maybe there's a simple text editor, simpler than Kwrite even, written in Qt. And now you would know how to write that. And you can do that in like 100 lines or 120 lines, something like that. It's not complex. I mean, it is complex, but it's not impossible. You can get there. So it's really nice to have these simple applications, because it's, you know, like if you're trying to, I don't know, launch something in a container, and you're just trying to figure out or build a flat pack or X forwarding over SSH, you just want to see the proof that it worked. You don't want to have to worry about the details, like, okay, is the application rendering correctly, and is it also sending the sound and the graphics at a reasonable rate, and blah, blah, blah. It's just, you just want to see, am I at least making a connection? It's kind of like a ping, almost, you know? It's like, you don't need it to do anything. You just want to see that it's alive. And that's the kind of thing that XCalc and XEyes and OClock and XClock, they're really great for that. I mean, XClock and OClock may have been really, really useful widgets at one point, because, I mean, you need a clock on your computer. Nowadays, I think it definitely falls within just the purview of really drop-dead simple application, but good for test cases. So XEyes, XClock, OClock, XCalc, XEdit, all of those applications, I mean, they're great for just those proof of concepts when you need something really simple, just something on the screen that you can determine quickly, is it there? And is it working as expected? And I think XEyes is probably one of my favorite one for that, because the eyeballs move, you know, like you can see that this is a application that is responding to input, because it follows your mouse cursor. Easy as that. And if you can see it, then it's running. And if it's moving, then it's working. So those applications are fantastic. They seem silly, They seem not very complex. They seem useless. They're not useless. They're useful for that very reason. That's it for this episode. We're not through the X's yet. The next episode is going to start with a bunch of video drivers that I'm just going to basically skip over. They're XF86 dash, oh, no, not video. Oh, they're input and video, yeah. So input, libmouse, and video, all of the different kinds of video devices. I have nothing to say about any of those things, so I'll skip those, basically. And pick up with, like, XFont Cell and XFS, which we've already kind of talked about. So what I'm trying to say is we are actually getting really close to the end of the X directory, which is exciting. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep the source open.
The end of the puppet show.